Hello, welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rao.
I'm Daniel John Mecca.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jordan.
And hello, listeners. We were going to talk about Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan today, among other things.
Among other things, including Andrew Jarecki's finally out in theaters / on demand, All Good Things, starring Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst. And Jordan's going to talk a little bit about The King's Speech, which is getting a lot of hype these days.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, and
before that,
let's talk about, we talked about Sundance a little bit last year, last podcast, we'd let you know we were going to attend, and planning on attending, and so the lineup got officially unveiled this week, so we were just going to talk about films that maybe you haven't heard of, that we're pretty excited for, and early in the week, they announced the, just the in-competition ones, which aren't, some of them, you know, don't feature as many big names and stuff, and then the next day they announced the out of competition, which included stuff like Kevin Smith's Red State, and we'll talk about more about those. But first, let's talk about the in competition ones. So these are ones like Winter's Bone last year won the dramatic category. Here are some possibilities that could win. So first up, I think one of the most buzzed about dramatic features would be the directorial debut from Vera Farmiga.
Yeah, Vera Farmiga. Yeah, I mean, I think we hold a special kind of place in it because it was shot in upstate New York, which is where she went to school and where we went to school. So maybe we even tried to get onto that set. I remember for a brief time just because we heard she was shooting up in the Rochester area, which is where Jordan's from. And so I'm really excited just to see her use of that kind of desolate landscape, which, you know, not enough people utilize. You know, if you've seen The Savages that was shot in Buffalo, and they that film makes great use of just what Western New York looks like, which is, you know, a Rust Belt, Rust Belt region that just is tired and kind of without people and without industry.
Yeah, the quick synopsis. A frustrated young mother turns to a fundamentalist community for answers, but after years of dogma and loss, she must find the courage to ask the questions that will help her reclaim her life.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and it is actually the second one of two John Hawks films that are in competition. He has another one that I hadn't heard of before called Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Really bankable title. I don't know. Just kind of funny. So there's also Terry from with John C. Reilly, who he came with Cyrus last year, the Duplass brothers Cyrus, which actually there it's kind of weird. The Duplass brothers movie Jeff Lives at Home
is not
here
anywhere to be seen. Well, I think Jeff Lives at Home though is getting a Cyrus like release, right? Isn't it? Getting...
They haven't heard anything. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like head backing from like a studio.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's another one, Terry, that we're excited for. There's some cool ones that I hadn't heard of before.
Here would be one, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, the ones that we haven't heard of until really right now, one of them is Here, which I'm excited for. It's kind of like, the synopsis is that on assignment to create a new, more accurate satellite survey of Armenia, an American cartographer, someone who makes maps, forms a powerful bond with an Armenian expatriate and art photographer. And Ben Foster is, I believe, the cartographer. And it's just interesting because, you know, you don't see a lot of movies about cartographers. One, not many movies set in Armenia. Two, and it's a romance. Ben Foster has been really building his reputation. He was great in The Messenger. Yes. He was great in movies like 30 Days a Night and through 310 to Yuma. And he can kind of do it all, so it's going to be nice to see him in what looks to be somewhat like a romance, but I can probably assume that there'll be some haunted scenes and what have you, and, you know, hard acting by the young guy, but I'm just excited to see it. Curious, I didn't really know about it. It kind of reminds me of a movie I just saw recently, finally got around to seeing, called Triage, directed by Danis Takaniv, and starring Colin Farrell. Didn't really get a lot of play. It's a war photojournalist story, but also a romance, a lot about guilt and stuff like this, and this seems to kind of be on the other side of that type of tale, and hopefully they really use the Armenian landscape, because, you know, I really don't know much about that country, so.
Yeah, another one that I just, based off the synopsis alone, that I want to see is Another Earth. This is the synopsis. On the eve of the discovery of a duplicate Earth, a horrible tragedy. Irrevocably. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
It's big words. Alters the lives of two strangers who become an unlikely love affair.
Right.
So,
starring William Athaper, who is Tom Cruise's cousins.
Oh, wow.
Because Tom Cruise's given name is Mathper.
Yes. And I've never heard of this man, but Flint Beveridge, that sounds like a cool name.
Is there some... Wow. And Robin Lord Taylor. Okay, that's not that.
So we'll definitely be reporting on that one. In terms of other ones with big stars, there's Homework, Emma Roberts, Freddie Highmore. And then an interesting one...
And Michael Angarano.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then The Loved Ones, which is kind of interesting, because there was a film at TIFF, not this year, but the year before, that I saw.
Called The Lucky Ones?
No, called The Loved Ones as well.
And really?
It was a great horror movie, like extremely violent, over the top, from Australia. And so one of the same name, dealing with different things, starring Demi Moore, like you said, and Kate Bosworth, and Thomas Hayden Church, Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah. It looks like a wedding movie where siblings collide.
Rachel getting married,
ceremony, what have you.
Yes. So I think that in terms of
documentary. There's also Like Crazy, which I've read about before, I'm excited to see. This is a film starring Anton Yelchin and Jennifer Lawrence, who was the bone of winter last year, and amazing in that film, and will certainly get a Oscar nomination for her amazing performance. Absolutely. In that film. And so definitely look out for that one, because that has a lot of young up-and-comers. Anton Yelchin also recently in the trailer premiere of The Beaver, which was, not surprisingly, but refreshingly nice to watch. It looks like a really good trailer. I'm really excited to see that movie when someone releases it in the spring.
Yeah, and then just quickly, some documentaries that I'm excited for. Being Elmo, the guy that was Muppet Elmo.
That is just that's a Sundance documentary.
As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, okay.
That belongs to Sundance.
And then Michael Rapaport, the actor that you may know from Boston.
No, from
Public,
every movie.
Special,
yeah.
Other movies like that. He did a documentary, which as of this week, Tribe Called Quest. It's based on the group Tribe Called Quest. And I read an article where Q-Tip, one of the members, said that he does not authorize the documentary. He said, "Is that kind of crazy?"
Really?
I guess the past, this has been like 5 years, maybe longer in the making, and he said like that he's got interviews from him, and he said he might have seen the final product and didn't like it or something, but it was kind of interesting.
Interesting. Wow.
So I'm even more interested to see it now.
Totally. I mean, honestly, the trailer came out. It's on YouTube and also on the film
since
stage.
Taken down. But
oh, is it? Oh, well, never mind. But anyway, from what I saw of it, it looked kind of, really shoddily shot and, very digital. And that doesn't make a movie bad, but it makes a movie harder to watch. Yes. So if it's not good, it makes it worse. Yep. So hopefully it's good.
Yeah, and then another one I think you'll be excited for, Dan. Page One, A Year Inside the New York Times.
Hell yeah.
It's just unprecedented access to the New York Times newsroom yields a complex view of the transformation of a media landscape.
My fear of that, though, would be this. The September issue came out a couple years ago, and that movie was hailed as being like a look at Anna Wintour and kind of like The Real Devil Wears Prada and, the way the fashion industry works and all this stuff. And I watched it. I was interested. I enjoyed The Devil Wears Prada. I liked the idea of like workplace, observation and what have you. And it was a really thin documentary that was clearly like playing to Anna Wintour and like clearly needed her permission and clearly was like completely unbiased and ended up being kind of boring because you really didn't learn anything that you didn't already know in some way. And so I really hope that Page One, A Year Inside the New York Times, is actually A Year Inside the New York Times and not A Year Inside the New York Times, courtesy of the New York Times, edited by the New York Times. So hopefully we'll see, but definitely, if it's true and somewhat revealing, that would be amazing.
Yes, definitely. And then you can move on to Out of Competition, which definitely has some bigger names to it.
Is that always the way it's been?
I was wondering that, because like last year, Buried, I don't think, was it up for...
So. Sundance has become, a platform thing now, where you have these like films like we're about to talk about, kind of have their... PR release, really.
Well, I mean, a lot of them already have set release dates.
Right, exactly. Like so it's just more getting the word out, but...
Yeah, like Cedar Rapids, Miguel Arteta, who did Youth in Revolt. Mm-hmm. This one stars Ed Helms and John C. Reilly, again, actually, and Sigourney Weaver. And I'm really excited. It's a wholesome and Wisconsin man travels to big city Cedar Rapids to represent his insurance company at a conference.
Oh, interesting.
So
there's also the Convincer, which I'm excited about because Greg Kinnear plays an insurance salesman, just because it's Greg Kinnear. And I'm excited to see him.
If he can make Flash of Genius.
Right, exactly, yeah. I mean, hey, my mom loves Flash of Genius. So if he can make my mom like Flash of Genius, then I got to see this film. Yeah. Yep. And then the details, which I the script's been floating around forever. I read it about 1,000 years ago, and I remember really enjoying it. It's a strange movie about worms that are living in a young couple's backyard. And this problem causes an array of other deeper problems, and I think the title's really nice, and I mixed the cast of McGuire, Elizabeth Banks, Laura Linney, Ray Liotta, and Dennis Haysbert.
Nice.
You know, which anything to get Dennis Haysbert out of those Allstate commercials really is enough to go to the theater.
Yes.
And then I Melt With You, I can't wait to see, because I think Mark Pellington has never gotten the credit that he deserves, neither has Thomas Jane. And Christian McKay, after his breakthrough role in Me and Orson Welles, definitely deserves more attention. So I'm really excited to see this. I think it's a really character.
Sasha Gray, porn star.
And Sasha Gray. I don't really care about her. Hated her in Entourage, but what it's nice to see her still making dramas. Exactly. Loved her in The Girlfriend Experience. Good to see she's still doing the drama thing. And, about four friends who, you know, celebrate something and then they reveal secrets, which, you know, is an oldie, but a goodie. And a good title. I Met With You. Can't wait.
The one I think we reported on, Kevin McDonald, he called together all these YouTube videos. It's kind of like Ridley Scott.
That's that movie, Life in a Day.
Yeah.
Oh.
Didn't he either work with Ridley Scott?
Yeah, they both did.
They both did it, right? And it's the world's largest user-generated feature film. So I mean, it could turn out to be terrible, but I'm interested to see.
Yeah, sure.
And then another movie that actually already has a release date, like Cedar Rapids, is Margin Call. It's coming out April 15th already, but it's going to premiere at Sundance.
Yeah, I hope Margin Call doesn't become next year's State of Play. A really good movie that comes out in April and makes no money, and then people spend the next 2 years being like, you know, that movie was good. It's a shame nobody saw it.
Yeah.
Hope that people end up seeing it.
I mean, it's another financial thriller. Kevin Spacey, Paul Bettany, Jeremy Irons, Zachary Quinto, Demi Moore. Another Demi Moore movie.
Demi, she's making that indie comeback.
Doing it.
I love it.
And then one,
no more Mr. Brooks for her.
Yes. And then one, I remember we reported, like, crazy, My Idiot Brother. They got tons of female cast additions, a really strong female cast next to Paul Rudd, and it's premiering there. Elizabeth Banks, Zooey Deschanel, Emily Mortimer, and there's even more that I'm forgetting. But yes.
Wasn't Lizzie Caplan in it too?
Yeah, there are more. You want to talk about Red State, Kevin Smith?
You talk about Red State, I guess, just to say that I'm excited because it would appear to be a horror movie, a horror thriller that. Is not obviously like anything he's done before.
I'm more excited for the screening because he has said that he is going to auction off the film eBay style as soon as the screening ends to all the industry people that are there. So we will see how that goes down.
No way.
That's what he said.
Oh, no, actually, and before we stop, let me just bring this up. I'm really excited to see this film. The Son of No One, which is Dito Montiel's third film.
Yes.
And
the third with Channing Tatum.
The third with Channing Tatum. Completing the Channing Tatum.
The Tatum trilogy,
Tatum Montiel trilogy. But in all seriousness, Jordan really loved God of Recognizing Saints. I thought it was kind of over route and a little bit too easy, what have you. You know, it was a good movie. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I don't think it was amazing. Jordan really loved it. And then kind of on the opposite side, I saw Fighting, and I love Fighting. I love that movie. I thought it was a really nice stripped-down story that actually Terrence Howard gave probably the best performance of his career. Channing Tatum kind of was able to outstretch himself a little bit. And, you know, that movie didn't really get the attention that it deserved, in my opinion. And so I really hope this movie's kind of the perfect mash of those two films. Me and Jordan will both love this one. Al Pacino plays a cop. Channing Tatum plays a fatherless cop, too, I think. And it's about their relationship. Yes. And Katie Holmes is in it, also Tracy Morgan, which is kind of strange.
Yeah.
And Ray Liotta is in another movie. I don't think he's ever not in a movie. And Juliette Binoche.
Yeah,
so a strange, intriguing cast.
Yeah. And then one I think we're both super excited for would be Win-Win.
Oh, yeah.
Tom McCarthy, who gave us The Station Agent. And The Visitor, both great films. Paul Giamatti, Amy Ryan.
I mean, Tom McCarthy pretty much is the filmmaker that I want to be. So whenever I hear he's got a movie coming out, I just I get envious in my head, but also very, very excited to see his films because he makes small films that kind of stick with you forever.
Yes.
You know, everybody I know who's seen The Visitor, honestly, everybody I know, be they film people or not, always come back to it. It always comes back in conversation. It's a film that I think, because immigration will never go away, I think it's a film that will kind of remain undated for a long, long time, and I think that's huge.
Yes.
And I really hope Win-Win kind of lives up to his own hype.
Yep. Then, I mean, quickly, Doc premieres, new film by Morgan Spurlock, new film by Eugene Jarecki, who we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about his brother's film. Yeah.
But then some films we saw at TIFF, TIFF and NYFF. Submarine, which I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. Probably my second favorite film there.
Meek's Cutoff, which is a huge step forward for, in terms of scope, a huge step forward for Kelly Reichardt. So make sure to check that out because it's definitely something worth at least marveling out visually.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. And then there's the Midnight Run.
Troll Hunter. I think everybody and their mother keeps talking about
it. Yeah, and it got decent reviews on it. It premiered.
A group of student filmmakers get more than they bargained for when tangling with a man tasked with protecting Norway from giant trolls.
Yes. Crazy.
And all right.
Then Hobo with a Shotgun, which
we shouldn't talk
whatever.
About.
All right. And we'll skip over that one. And, yeah, so that about rounds up our excitement for Sundance.
No, it's going to be good. It looks, you know, like a solid year.
Yes. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more discoveries. You know,
and it is amazing how, you know, that festival can really kind of put a movie into the back burner or push a movie into the front. You know what I mean? Because, you know, think about it. Before Sundance came out, all Winter's Bone was the next movie by that woman who did Down to the Bone 5 years ago. And now it's a contender for Best Picture, a certainty for Best Actress, and most definitely a certainty for Screenplay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's, you know, good for Deborah Granik. And, you know, I just think that we're going to definitely see at least a couple like that this year, so I can't wait to be there for it.
Yeah.
It's going to be sick.
You gotta move on to reviews.
Yeah, reviews. Let's do it. I'll start with All Good Things, which I caught actually hours ago, courtesy of VOD. Thank you, Magnolia Pictures. Directed by Andrew Jarecki, the co-founder of Movie Film and the documentary director of Capturing the Freedmans, which disturbed many, many people. And,
oh, I loved it.
You know, and you know, everybody who disturbed, they loved it as well. And I think they came out in 2002. And this movie has been a long time coming. It was shot in 07-08 in Connecticut, mostly. And it tells it kind of fictionalizes the true life story of Robert Durst, who is the son of real estate mogul Seymour Durst. They owned a lot of real estate in Midtown Manhattan. And Robert Durst was a troubled young man, according to this film and according to reports and testimony. And he married a woman of lesser standards or lesser wealth standards named, I believe her name was Kathleen McCarthy. In the movie, it's Catherine McCarthy. Something they changed the end of the mic there a little bit, but anyway, David Marks is the name of Ryan Gosling's character, who's based on Robert Durst, and Katie Marks is the wife, who's played by Kirsten Dunst, and Katie Marks, fictionally and in real life, disappeared mysteriously in 1982, and this film kind of tries to put all the pieces together in a cohesive form and fails, kind of in the same way that Love and Other Drugs fails, I would say, oddly enough. It tries to do a whole lot within a really confined period of time. You have Frank Langella playing this kind of quintessential, rich, unloving father, you know, a la Pierce Brosnan in Remember Me, a la Chris Cooper in, you know, movie 1,000 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, every actor in Frank Langella's now older generation has played this character, you know, this role before. And Frank Langella does a great job with it. You know, Ryan Gosling, no one could play troubled like him. So David Marks is kind of forced into the real estate business by his father after trying to get out. He marries this woman, Katie, who's just kind of a girl from Long Island who really doesn't know better. And you just watch the breakdown of the relationship. You watch David Marks kind of lose his mind. The performances are strong. The writing's a little on the nose, a little recycled, a little impersonal. And the direction never seems to have that much direction. You know what I mean? I think that Jarecki probably was served better when he was pointing the camera at the action that was happening in real life and interviewing, because it seems like that was what he, you know, kind of was meant to do, at least from what I've heard and seen of Capturing the Freedmans. And this just feels, I mean, you know, whoever lit it, which I think we can, let's see who lit it, because I just want to mention, because they did a really good job. I really appreciated the cinematography. By Michael Cerezin. And what else has this guy done?
Oh, he did Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
It's a little step up. That was.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at his, if looking at his filmography now, like Domestic Disturbance, Life of David Gale, bad movies, but like it matches with the tone of this film, which is a relationship thriller, you know, like Domestic Disturbance. And so the lighting's dark, kind of film noirish. There's a lot of call-outs to Psycho in the third act of this thing, even up to a point where, while this murder's taking place, you watch Ryan Gosling kill a fly, in reference to, of course, the line in the Hitchcock film.
Yeah.
So, he's the director of photography for Angel Heart, which is like the quintessential 80s noir film. But anyway, it just never fully meshes. It never fully molds. But it's pure ambition that just never, you know, that just never finds the right kind of, you know, the right mesh. You know, like I said, I mean, the Gosling performance is good, but he's done better. It reminded me a lot of his performance in The United States of Leland, which is like another movie that never really finds its voice. But, you know, Ryan Gosling plays Leland, this troubled young man. And it seems one note to me, oddly, and it's weird because he's really one of the best actors of our generation. But this performance never takes shape. You never really believe it in any real way. Kirsten Dunst, on the other hand, oddly, you know, I'm not a huge fan of her, but I thought she did a great job in this film. Because she plays innocent, then she plays, you know, scorned, real well. A lot of serious things happen, and Jericho takes it all very, very seriously. And I actually just read Glenn Kenny's review of this film, and he makes a really good point. He says how it's such a strange true story, and when you see the movie, I'm not going to spoil anything, but when you see the movie, you'll know what I mean. Like, the fact that all of this stuff pretty much did happen, it's amazing that this is true. And it's so true that it almost feels false. And the fact that Jericho takes the subject matter so seriously, I think, is a detriment. And this is what Kenny said. You know, he referenced how if you watch Barbet Schroeder's Reversal of Fortune with Jeremy Irons and Glenn Close, which was like a huge movie back, I think, in the early 90s, it's such a ridiculous story that's very similar to this, about a murder and a rich guy and his wife and all this. But there's a dark humor to it. And it helps the movie because you can laugh at the fact that this actually happened in real life. Unfortunately, All Good Things doesn't really have any comedic beats. I think it probably has to do with Ryan Gosling being super serious method actor. It has to maybe do with Andrew Jericho not being confident enough in the story he's telling. And but I'm glad it came out. You know, there was a whole Weinstein thing. People didn't know if it was ever going to come out. Jericho bought the movie back, or at least tried to. Then finally, Magnolia picked it up and distributed it. And you have this. And even though it probably deserved a bigger opening, I'm glad it came out. People should see it just to know about this crazy story. But it won't be winning any Oscars or anything like that. So, you know, if you have VOD, I would say check it out. But there's no reason to run to the theater to see it.
Now, a film that you should run to the theaters and see.
Yeah.
The King's Speech. Yes. Yeah. Tom Hooper, who The Damned United, he did that last, I think that was just last year, or 2 years ago.
Adams miniseries, which is a very, 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 very good HBO miniseries.
Yes, actually But yeah. So King's Speech, I mean, it is a standard story. It tells, I think it's King John.
A tale of inspiration.
Six, yes. King George the Sixth, played beautifully by Colin Firth. He has a stammer. And it's just kind of the story of how he is kind of fighting that. And Helena Bonham Carter, who is, it's nice to see her kind of not.
Not burtonized.
Like, yeah, not burtonized, exactly.
Not burtonized, nice to see it.
Not a gothic queen in this film. No, he teams up with Jeffrey Rush.
But an actual queen in this film.
Yes. He teams up with Jeffrey Rush, and I mean, the best moments of this film are kind of their relationship as he,
conflict with Jeffrey Rush. Right?
Yes.
Their relationship.
Yeah, their relationship, yeah. And, yeah, and then they just kind of, I mean, this movie just kind of builds toward this main event of a speech that he is going to give, which is kind of...
The King's Speech.
Yes, that declares war. It's, spoilers, sorry, for real life.
Well, no, King George, his brother resigned the throne, who I think is played by Guy Pearce, right?
Yes.
And in real life, he had to overtake it, and this is right before World War II. Mm-hmm. Most people remember Winston Churchill, but he actually wasn't the king.
Who was briefly in here as well.
Right. And the speech that this movie focuses on, from what I've read, is his speech right before World War II and declaring war against Germany, against Hitler. And obviously you can't have a king who stammers in a time of need like that.
Yep. And, so, yeah. And I mean, this one premiered at, well, I think it premiered before TIFF, but it was at TIFF. And I didn't think I was going to check this out. And then it won the audience award and they had a special screening. And, I mean, everyone was already kind of amped up, and this movie is just like the ultimate crowd pleaser, I would say, of the year. I mean, 127 hours kind of is more, you feel things internally and you maybe think, but this movie is like very, you know, people were cheering in the theater, nice. Clapping. I mean, it's not like Black Swan, we're going to talk about later, kind of. I mean, it does play a certain role, but there's a lot of surprises, I would say. This film just kind of goes along, and you kind of know what's going to happen, but it does everything perfectly, like I said.
Well, it doesn't have, and also, I mean, I think it doesn't have the perversities inherent in Black Swan or 127 Hours.
Yeah, true.
You know, because, you know, having seen 127 Hours, though that be an inspirational movie, and it is very much so, at the end of the day, you have to watch a man cut off his arm, right, you know, yes. So, I mean, there is that horrific element to it, and, you know.
And, I mean, even talking about the MPA, I cannot believe that this got an R rating. I mean, there's one, it's the most unoffensive kind of film for everyone that I've seen. There's one scene, I mean, anyone that has read upon this movie has said, I mean, has heard that there's one scene where there's a slur of swear words he uses, but it's not directed towards anyone. It's because of the stammer. It's very funny. Like, it's not, yeah. And so, I guess they're releasing it as R. They're not going to fight it. They try to fight it. I don't think it.
Yeah, no, yeah. Nothing happened with it. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it also is photographed beautifully. He uses kind of like a fisheye lens, I would say. There's some, and with really long shots. And it's kind of, I mean, some scenes are jarring in a good way, like, in terms of the composition, like, they'll be, you know, Colin Firth will be in the very far left corner frame, and you'll see them, just a beautiful wall, like, behind him or something, and at first you're like, oh, and you know, it's, but I mean, it fits with this, with kind of this grand, theme of the film, and, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, a really feel-good movie, you know, not one you will talk about for hours on end, but one that, you can thoroughly enjoy.
Right.
I mean, I would just recommend it literally to anyone. I mean, we talked about Helena Bonham Carter, but she is slightly, like, wasted a little bit just because the relationship between Firth and Rush is so strong that, she just kind of feels like the woman that's kind of just pushing him to go to the speech therapist. Then once he actually goes to him and the relationship starts, she's kind of in the background a little bit. But I mean, she still gives a good performance. I don't think she's going to be sort of rostered and anything like some we're talking about, but but definitely I would say Firth, and as we talked about a few weeks ago, James Franco will kind of be the front runners
Firth or Franco. We come on,
what's that?
Firth or Franco?
Firth or Franco.
Now that we've reviewed both films, I'm gonna go back to this question. I'm gonna ask you. I haven't seen King's Speech yet, so I can't answer. But you, Jordan Ralph, can Firth or Franco? It would appear one of them will win the Oscar this year.
Yes.
It would appear that one of them will win the Oscar. Who won last year? Firth didn't win for Single Man last year, right?
No. Jeff Bridges.
Right, Bridges, yeah. So I would say that Firth will probably win, just, I mean, politically speaking, yeah. I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, we saw, which we didn't talk about, we did see the NBR, National Board of Review, come out, and they completely disregarded every single thing, every single Fox Searchlight film. So that includes Black Swan and 127 Hours. And those, I mean, 127 Hours and Black Swan are films that both kind of are a little out there in terms of the Academy, I think. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, kind of like The Wrestler was that way, too, in terms of they picked.
No, The Wrestler was out there?
Compared to
The Wrestler's like the oldest, you know, tale as old as time.
Yeah, but there was kind of horrific scenes in there. Like,
really? Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, this is
a performance you can watch and say, wow, he did an amazing job. I loved everything about it. You know, I can't. And right. with James Franco, like, either, maybe Academy members are too frightened to even watch it. I mean, I know people I know that are older that won't even go see the film because they know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, it is doing decent in limited release.
Oh, it's doing well, yeah.
But yeah. But I mean, if I would have to say, I guess James Franco, just because it's hard though. They're both great. I mean, James Franco by a little hair.
James Franco by hair.
Because, I mean, Colin Firth, but he's great with it. He does the stammer well, so I don't know. And it is, it's an impossible choice. It is one of the closest, I think.
I wonder. In a while. Is there anyone else who's going to breach that gap, that competition?
Jeff Bridges, maybe.
In what?
True Grit. But possibly. If. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the earlier reviews said it's not like a surefire Oscar hit like some thought, but I think he could be considered. But I mean, he already won, so I don't think.
I mean, from what I've read, it would appear Matt Damon's the dark horse for supporting actor. That's supporting, what a lot of people are saying. Yeah.
But Christian Bale, I think, has that locked up.
Really? God damn it! This movie's the fighter. Are you seeing that?
Seeing this week.
So yeah, we'll seeing that this week. So we'll see.
We'll bring a review later. But I mean, King's Speech, go see it. Absolutely.
Take your family.
Yeah, take your family. Apparently. And even if it's rated R, doesn't matter. I mean, you can cover your ears that one scene, I guess. If you're being little children. All right. Gonna move on.
Let's do it.
All right. To our feature review, Black Swan. Now this is the fifth film from Darren Aronofsky. Another film I saw at TIFF. And we just checked out a second press screening. Actually, it was like an Academy screening, kind of. It was kind of odd.
Yeah, it was kind of an odd experience.
At the Paris Theater in New York City. And yeah, I mean, this is Natalie Portman's kind of, I would say, one of her best performances, if not the best.
Certainly her most committed performance.
Yes.
That is for sure.
And like we said before, it's kind of half, I would say half The Wrestler kind of building up, then half. I mean, it doesn't kind of...
I mean, it really is neither.
Neither.
I mean, you know...
You don't think... I think it's very close to The Wrestler.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like The Wrestler. I mean, but this is a woman... I mean, this is a woman who's climbing up. You know, The Wrestler was about a man who was, you know, trying not to fall all the way down. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like there's a different trajectory happening here. And also, I mean, the psychosomatic stuff going on in here, don't even touch what's happening in The Wrestler.
That's true.
You know, and I mean, if there's... If there's one thing that The Wrestler is, that Black Swan is, certainly is not, it is subtle. Yeah. The Wrestler has moments. You know, The Wrestler is on the nose, certainly, but The Wrestler has scenes where people don't say much, but they say a lot. You know, Mickey Rourke's very good at doing that. Black Swan has literally not a one scene where people don't say something that is not then backed up by 1,000 other crazy symbolic things that happen. So.
True. Well, what are your initial thoughts, Dan?
When I first saw this movie, honestly, I did not know what to think. I mean, it knocked me off my ass. I found myself trying to close my eyes, but being unable to because it was so fascinating what was happening up on the screen. And obviously, the cinematography by Matthew Lapatique is just unbelievable. The opening scene, I'll never forget the way that they shoot that with the Steadicam. I think it's Steadicam.
The whole film, Steadicam.
Yep.
I just watched Steadicam, the feature.
Is unbelievable, the opening scene. And I would see the film for the opening scene, but then want to leave for the rest of the film just because... And the Tree of Life show, just because of how just unbelievably disturbing it is. You know, Aronofsky's a dude who every one of his films, and we were talking about this once we saw it, there's a lot of self-mutilation. You know, you have Pi, my man loses his mind, shaves his head, hurts himself because he's trying to figure out Pi, right? And okay, Requiem, very on the nose,
everything.
You know, heroin, and they're literally sticking themselves with drugs and everywhere. And then, you know, you have The Fountain, which is probably his least, you know, his most romantic and least self-mutilated friendly film. But even still, you have Hugh Jackman really hurting himself and other characters hurting themselves for what they believe in. And then of course, The Wrestler, you know, have a couple really horrific scenes where, you know, he's shoving his hand in the meat cutter and all this. And Black Swan is the Ninth Symphony of Aronofsky's self-mutilation films. And I enjoyed it, and I would compare it to Hitchcock's Psycho, which is funny because I said that with All Good Things, but I would even more directly compare it to Psycho because at the end of the movie, this is B-movie schlock.
Yeah.
This is B-movie schlock. This is Barbara Hershey's in it, Barbara Hershey. What I remember for is this cut-up film called Outer Space, which was based... They took footage from a Barbara Hershey, rape horror movie that she was in. I can't remember the title of that film, but they took that footage. We watched it in film school, and they cut it up in this way. I can't remember who did the film, but it's called Outer Space. You can watch it on YouTube. It's amazing. It's about 20 minutes long, and it'll just fuck with your head. And this movie is in the vein of that, and of course, Barbara Hershey plays Natalie Portman's mother in this film, and is amazing. And I really hope that someone decides that she deserves an Academy Award Supporting Actress nomination, but it doesn't look that like that'll happen, but hopefully. But anyway, as B movie schlock, I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot. It's actually an oddly funny film. And, like, some of the horrific things that happen are so over the top and, like, in a couple cases, like, poorly done special effects-wise that you have to laugh. And, like, it seems intentional, at least. But overall, I really don't know what he's trying to say. I mean, the movie's about perfection, I guess, and, you know, about the artist's struggle. But I've seen better movies about the artist's struggle. And, you know, movies that didn't have to show me fingernails being torn, you know, all the way up the arm and, you know... just a thousand other just unbelievable fucking thankless things. And so, I mean, I struggle with it. I struggle with how I feel because at the end of the day, if all this movie is the red shoes, then I would just watch the red shoes because the red shoes does it with a lot more grace and a lot more romance. And, you know, I don't really know, I guess, why it was necessary to have it go so far, but then obviously I sound like an idiot for saying that. But you know, go ahead.
I mean, this is probably, if not my favorite film of the year, I'm really close up there. I mean, I just think it's so effective in what it does, but like you said, I don't think it's, you know, a masterpiece of, you know, like, I mean, the fact that I think this is probably isn't his best film. I would say I like The Fountain more. So,
well, I mean, but, like all of his films, I mean, and the beauty of Darren Aronofsky, and this is why, I'll respect him, obviously, to the day I die. And, you know, hearing news about the Wolverine is so interesting because of these films. It's like, because when my man Darren makes a movie, like, he goes balls out with that movie, no matter, be it about, you know, a down-and-out wrestler, be it about a prima ballerina, be it about a timeless romance. It's always so far out there and so fucking, like, just, you know, what is going on with this? What am I seeing? That it's worth watching again, even if it may, in fact, be a failure, you know, or what have you.
I just think that all these little pieces he adds to it, that just build up to, like, I mean, the build up of this movie is one of the best of the year, I think, in terms of...
Yeah, that final scene, you know, this movie's about the Black Swan. Swan Lake is the ballet that they're rehearsing for, and so the last third act revolves around the opening performance of Swan Lake and Nina... Sayers, who is Natalie Portman, is the Swan Queen, both the black and the white Swan Queen, and the final performance, that entire scene is shot in this amazing way, and there's a lot of backstage stuff that's going on, and everything comes to a head, and it's so beautifully done that by the end, you can't help but just feel like you just got off of a roller coaster. And so that's what I mean. Like, this movie is amazingly effective. And so, you know, that's why I struggle with how I feel about it, because it was an amazingly effective movie. You know what I mean? So I don't really know where I stand.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say because, like, I mean, like, something like The Social Network, which I think is your, what'd you say?
One of my favorites of the year, for sure.
That is a movie I know I will watch more than Black Swan.
Yeah.
And repeated viewings, but Black Swan was, you know, I mean, if only for that first viewing, but I would say the second viewing was just as, hit me just as hard, because with the second, I mean, the first one, it's about surprise, like, you know, and then the second one, you're anticipating all these things that you were horrified by the first time, so it's more, I mean, it's even harder to watch, I would say, the second time.
Right.
And, So, I mean, I don't know if it's a film I would watch or even own again, but it's just, kind of like The Wrestler, I haven't seen... like we said, The Fountain is the only one that I've, you know, repeatedly have watched.
You know, I guess this is what I'd say. This is what I'd say about Black Swan that bothers me, is that, and it's really not the gore, I guess. It's really not any of that. What it is that, what my problem with the film is, you know, you have Vincent Castle plays the ballet, the choreographer, Thomas Leroy, and he is constantly, literally in this film, constantly telling Natalie Portman that she would make a great white queen, Swan Queen, but it can't be, you know, the bad, you know, the Black Swan, the evil Swan, because she doesn't have that fire in her. And the entire movie, literally, the entire movie is about her finding that fire. And that is, I mean, it's a when you think about it like that, it's a thin kind of a movie. Yeah. I mean, it's about this girl who still lives with her mom in this Upper East Side apartment. Or Upper West Side? Upper Side apartment in New York City. Yeah. And, like, you know, there's why is this woman still living with her mom? You know, she's clearly, she's like 30 years old. Like, she's still, you know, she's a child still. And she cries like a child. She whimpers like a child. And that's what she does the entire movie. You know, and then at the end she transforms, and it's an impressive transformation for sure. And Natalie Portman definitely deserves a lot of credit for, you know, really going deep, deep, deep into this performance. But I guess it just, if at the end of the day, really all the film is about is this dancer's transformation into the, you know, this like fully realized, you know, kind of double identity on the stage and then, of course, off the stage. Is it worth all that stuff for really such a thinly veiled story? Or is it something where, you know, what Aronofsky's saying, and you've seen this with a lot of artists, you know, like even in 8.5 you see this. I mean, you know, 8.5 is a lot like this where, you know, great art can only be achieved by losing everything, you know, that kind of a thing. So, I mean, yeah, that's a very grandiose thing. And, you know, maybe if you take it that way, maybe this is a masterpiece in its own way. But I just, at the end of the day, I just can't really fully see how, like, all the doppelgangers of Natalie Portman in this movie, the Mila Kunis, is she real, is she not, like Barbara Hershey, the ballerina, these paintings that Barbara Hershey does that are all of a sudden, like, yelling at her, all the self-mutilation. It's like, what is, what, like, what does all this really mean? Like, is there a reason for every single part of this film?
That is true.
No, you know what right. I mean? Like, why is there a dude in a weird mask running around at night with the thing and, you know, like, at some point, it just does feel a little bit like shock value to me. Mm-hmm. But then it's funny, and so you think, oh, well, maybe this is on purpose, and it's really just like this B-schlock horror movie masquerading as this kind of above-it art house film. Mm-hmm. But can you have it both ways?
Yeah.
I think that's really the question that I guess every viewer has to decide for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, does he achieve in kind of... You know, in imitating an art house film that really is a schlock B horror movie, is it both? I guess really is the question, and I honestly don't know. I need more time, even though I saw fucking 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it's. I mean, it's definitely an effective piece, like we said, that fits within his filmography.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah, I mean, I definitely think it should be seen by literally. I mean, I don't think there was a funny impression. One of my friends said there was a lot of older people expecting like kind of just a ballet. Film, almost like The Red Shoes. That,
yeah.
But this is, I mean, this is a horror film. Like, there's nothing around that. Like, totally. It was horrific. Like, I mean, even horror films from this year don't really, I'm not a horror fan, so I don't really go out and check them out, but, it is,
clearly the film that this most appropriately, parallels is, in terms of 2010 films, is Resident Evil Afterlife.
Oh, huge, yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of, just cinematic parallels between those two films.
I mean, but seriously, though, like, even, like, I mean, I think what, Paranormal Activity 2 was the only one I really saw. And that tries to get under your skin, and obviously it's a lot less subtle than, I mean, a lot, actually more subtle than Black Swan. But, I think Aronofsky doesn't even try to make horror. I mean, he tries with this, but his little touches, you can just tell, like you said, he just goes balls out and makes whatever genre he's doing, he makes it the best of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, and like I said, you know, that's why Aronofsky is great, will be great, will always be great, is because of his ambition to really push these genre limits. I mean, really, every film he has made, I guess aside from The Fountain, is kind of starkly in a genre. You know, it's staunchly this or that, or you can compare it to something else, definitely. And there's nothing wrong with that. And like you said, I think he's always trying to push the boundaries of those templates that he kind of chooses to work in. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I think honestly, at the end of the day, this is a film that, is not soon to be forgotten. And I would much rather be torn up about if I thought this movie was good or not than, than seeing a movie where I realized that all they wanted the movie to be was just okay. You know, and we've talked about this all the time. Like, yeah. Better to have
ambition.
An impressive failure. You know, better to make Heaven's Gate than to make, Vengeance Unstoppable. You know what I mean? Honestly, like, better to make Heaven's Gate, better to make Ishtar, you know, better to make town and country, you know, these horrible, you know, awful failures that try to do a thousand things. Better to make Love and Other Drugs than to make Unstoppable, because, you know, Unstoppable, films like that, these are films that are just films. They're films that run away trains. We like them because we've seen them before, and it's like, you know, it's like eating vanilla ice cream. It's always going to be good, but it's never going to be great. So I think that Black Swan is something that I will end up loving, honestly, just because of that exact reason. Mm. So there you go.
Do you want to get more into some of the other stuff?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go deep, we can go deep. Yeah, what'd you think of her?
I was going to go literally deep.
Of Mila. Oh, real deep.
No, I mean, I think she did what she had to do. And it was kind of fun. I didn't know Natalie Portman selected her to be.
Oh, really?
I guess because Aronofsky was like, you know, we need a doppelganger for you. And she was like, oh, well, I like Mila.
Mila.
And, I mean, they go deep in this film. Like, they...
I mean, yeah, obviously there's the lesbian sex scene. And it's...
I mean, I'm trying to think of a film. There was a film last year that we talked about this where you don't know what to think. Oh, Splice. It was, I saw that. That's a film this year. Where it's so funny because you just don't know what's going on.
What I think is funny is people love Splice for the exact reason that it seems that you love Black Swan and you hated Splice.
Yeah.
So you need to explain that.
I do. I think he was trying to kind of make a serious movie with Splice.
Okay, and you think that Aronofsky was not?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's even moments where you know he's trying to make fun. Like the scene, like you said, the guy that's dressed up in the evil.
Yeah, I mean, it's a character in the play. He's got this, like,
and
huge nose.
There's, like, a scene where, like, he laughs and, like, or says, like, in his normal voice, like, hey, what's up?
At the end of the movie.
And, like, I mean, just different things like that. Like, you know, you wouldn't find that kind of stuff in Splice. Like,
you don't find that stuff in Splice? That's what you're saying? Okay.
And, but anyways, these scenes, like, these sex scenes where people are like, oh my god, it's gonna be this graphic, like, just so hot scenes, but they're, like, so disturbing, like, unbelievably
disturbing. I mean, I know when people read the script, they're like, oh my god, are you kidding me? Like, Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman are the two girls who are gonna do this. And, like, I guess, like, for the first minute.
Yeah.
But not even, because by that point in the movie.
Well, no, they're just, they start, like, they just go at it, and you're like, oh, nice. And
then, we were in the theater, and by that point in the movie, things are already just going, like, batshit. So you know that there's no way that there's this lesbian scene's going to happen. It's just going to be, like, this nice little bit of soft core in the middle of this film. You know, obviously, and also it's Darren Aronofsky. It's not like he's going to, you know, just be completely exploitative without any reason at all, or any, like, fake reason at all. And so this happens, and the whole time I was like, yeah, this is hot, but, like, I'm so afraid. And, of course, it gets super creepy, and that's it. And then, you know, then you're like,
They said, kind of funny, they said Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman, before they did the scene, they didn't really talk about it at all. Like, all they know on the script was, like, they were going to do a lesbian sex scene. So anything you see on, they didn't even get directions, really. Like, anything you see on there is whatever in their minds, what they thought they should do. So it's just kind of interesting, like,
that's a little
where
interesting.
They went. I mean, I'm sure, like, there's a few scenes where there's a tattoo involved, that something happens, I'm sure they had to get that kind of, you know, the...
Oh, wing. The swan tattoo.
Yeah, the swan tattoo.
That she has.
And so, like, they had to get those certain shots, and I'm sure Aronofsky wanted that, but, like, you know, there's... I mean, they look well-experienced in the film, which is credit to them.
Oh, wow, all right.
So,
making judgment calls there, Jordan.
No, I mean, in terms, you know...
Because they're good actors?
They're good actresses, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
All right. That's not what I heard.
And, Clint Mansell's score, I mean, obviously does a rendition of...
I mean, most of it is, you know, the music from Swan Lake, classic ballet, which
even,
is obviously amazing. But he adds his own flair to it, and it's
very good. I don't know if he's actually... I'm sure he's involved with the literal sound design, little sound effects they put in.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
there's
not.
There's
a whole department for that.
Yeah, like there's one scene with Vincent Cassell and Natalie Portman where... it's leading up. She, you know, she's trying to kind of seduce him a little bit, he uses like this really subtle sound effect. Or actually, I mean, it's not that subtle because you can totally tell what it is.
None of the movie's
like,
subtle.
Yeah,
none of the movie's subtle. Okay, thank you.
If you weren't looking for it, I guess I don't know. Dan's off for the first time. Anyway, so
what is the sound effect?
It's almost like a subway train passing by, like
while
they're
and then they use the Steadicam of like it swings around from her point of view, and then it cuts back to him yelling, and then her from a third person, and it cuts really well. The editing is very good in this movie. Also, we'll say,
and really, I mean,
very violent editing style.
I mean, we went to UB, and there's a huge dance department there, and a lot of dance photography.
A whole
lot. Kind of reminded me of, in this film, how
Hold up.
How much better Darren House? No, I'm just kidding. No, there was, no. We saw good stuff, but we saw a lot of student films with dancing.
It's funny, and also, I mean, you know, and a lot of reviews mentioned the color template here. You know, you have black, white, and red, primarily, and I think it's interesting how it would appear like ballet. In my mind, from what I've watched of it, and you know, from the stuff that we saw at school, from the red shoes, obviously the red shoes is far more colorful, but there is something about it that feels black and white. Like it's this world that's very traditional in a way, like Swan Lake, where it's like the good guy, the bad guy, and one of the most interesting things about this film, for sure, is that like by the end of the movie, you have this like mesh where then she comes out as the Black Queen, and she's got like the pale white face, but then eyes, and it's like the red lipstick, and all of a sudden, like all these colors fuse very beautifully at the end to make. What, you know, it takes this traditional ballet, this traditional music, this traditional idea of dance, and really kind of like, you know, fuck them all together and this like crazy, crazy ending. And that, I mean, that is the stuff of this film that make it great. And then, you know, really the thematic stuff is what, you know, kind of, you know, leaves me wondering. But ultimately that stuff obviously makes it a masterpiece of technique without a doubt.
Totally.
And, yeah, the performance doesn't do too bad on the old, you know, I don't know too much about dance, but the way they shoot her definitely does her favors, but also, she is a dancer in real life, so she did a very good job.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few shots, I think, that are actually really extended takes of her dancing, like...
They shoot her from waist up most of the time, I mean...
So, but I mean, she said, you know, she got a year to practice this while they were getting financing together, so...
Right.
So, she definitely, you know... If only for that. I mean, there's a lot of...
I thought Mila Kunis really wasn't, like, I don't know, the scenes. Like, it felt to me as though they were trying to edit around the fact that Mila Kunis maybe wasn't the best dancer.
There was, I mean, the one shot where she's looking at
her from
the
balcony. And she's supposed to be very sensual, like, and really, she's just kind of, like, lazy, it seems like. Which kind of, that bothered me a little bit, but I mean, I guess you kind of let that one sit.
Yeah, you don't actually really see much of her dancing.
Right, exactly. I mean, I honestly think it, I don't know, I mean, obviously, I don't know this, but it feels like... They were like, shit, you know, like, we got to get around this. Because, like you said, there's only a few scenes, and those scenes are, you know, those scenes are quick, and what they say about the scenes don't really match with what we see. But you know, dig the movie into a grave or anything like that. Definitely, they did a good job if that was the case.
Yes, correct. I think we can, I mean,
yeah.
Winona Ryder, quick mention.
Whatever. you know. I thought it was an okay performance. What did you think? I don't know. What did you think of her performance?
I mean,
it's so crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah. Like, her performance is so unbelievably over the top that, like, I don't know. But I guess, really, at the end of the day, she's just the icing on the cake. Like, it's just kind of like, imagine, like, all right. Like, just, you know, she's just out of her mind, and I guess that makes sense. I mean, really, she's like the third doppelganger, you know, they all kind of look alike, and she's like, you know, the one who's made it this far. Yeah. So it would make sense that she's the most insane, you know, because she's the oldest.
Natalie Portman.
You know, so. Right, Natalie Portman, right, of course.
All right, yeah, well, I would say check out Black Swan.
Live it up.
Live it up. And
I mean, you know, but also don't, well, check it out.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want people to.
Don't, unlike the King's Speech, don't invite your
children. Yeah, I mean, definitely be of age for show.
Yes, definitely.
Not a good date movie either.
No.
Let's not take girls on first, second, or third dates to see this film.
No.
People listening.
But in the movie next week that they might be able to, The Tourist. I think
we're
gonna check that out next week and
can't
bring
wait.
It up to you.
I can
wholeheartedly say I will not be seeing Chronicles of Narnia. Kind of done with that series.
I mean, I have to say I missed the second film.
Me too.
After not loving the first.
Yeah, same.
But the one thing that does definitely interest me about this film, even though I like you said, probably won't see it in time for a podcast review, is that Michael Apted directed it.
Yeah.
And he is a very capable
director
who hasn't really done much in the last 10 to 20 years. So that's
kind of interesting. And I mean, in the reviews we read and posted, the producers kind of know that they kind of... faltered with the second film.
Well, I think they know, right? They were trying to kind of make
it more
pirates.
Yeah.
You know, trying to make Prince Caspian into Jack Sparrow or what have you. Not Jack Sparrow, but like, you know, a swashbuckling hero. And
so I guess this gets back to the roots.
Well, the Christian roots, I think,
Christian
was the biggest
roots.
thing. Because Prince Caspian lost a lot of that, you know, you know, the racist red state right that calls himself Catholics. Yeah. But I honestly, though, all jokes aside, I think that was a smart move. But I think, I mean, is it too little too late, though? I think is the real question.
I'm really interested
to
see what
it does. Disney dropped them.
Yeah.
And then they went to Fox, which, you know, I don't know. You know, the budget obviously is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So, we'll see.
Isn't it kind of weird that Tron Legacy comes out only a week after that?
And that's what I'm saying. It's like a packed, packed crowd right now. You have, you know, Tangled is doing quite well. Harry Potter obviously is just came out. So it's almost like, I don't know. Maybe we say this every year, but is it oversaturation? I mean, you have this, like, another Chronicles of Narnia film coming out.
I'm sure someone is going to do Alvin and the Chipmunks Business with either Yogi Bear, Gulliver's Travels, or...
Right, and all of those shitty films that are coming out. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like one of those is going to be... Like, where does Chronicles fit in all that? I don't really know. I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, if this film cost $200 million, which it most definitely did, then I guess worldwide, I don't know.
No.
So we'll see.
Well, we'll be back with the tourist.
Stay tuned.
And the fighter, actually. That's
right.
A good
right. You can give your little.
And the Tempest, actually. I think that doesn't come out for another week, but.
We can give a little small review about that, probably.
A little ditty.
All
right. Well, thank you for listening. If you have any questions, email us at editors@thefilmstage.com. And you can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And me at twitter.com/DJ Mecca.
Have a good one.